Author of the Week, with Jessica Burtis, Rebecca Bond, Alex Lefchuk, and of course, another sensationally talented purveyor of perfect prose. Wow, a lot of alliteration from an anxious announcer placed in a powerful post.
Following the ups and downs of being trapped in a lift in London, with only a Delhi-based call centre to help. Well, it could be a thriller, it could be a drama, it could be the next stage in comedy development and evolution. And we're delighted to actually welcome the genius behind Stuck, quite literally, stuckcomedy.com, the fabulous Andy Bolter. How are you, Andy?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Good to connect with yourself. Well, absolutely delight and good to connect with you, because obviously we don't want to be stuck in this particular aspect. Andy, I'm going to go straight into one of the questions we actually had from one of our North American correspondents, because she heard the whole show. And I think it's important to actually go straight to this. She enjoyed the Stuck clip, absolutely adores the sound production, particularly liked her Roger Mortis bits. That's another thing from that point of view. But her question is... do you have any memorable situations where you indeed have been stuck somewhere and it's had an impact, such as maybe an elevator? Your first question, Andy, from Jessica Burtis. What's your response?
No, I haven't been stuck in an elevator at all, actually. The only things I've been stuck in is probably jobs that I don't like.
That makes sense. That does make sense. But
if I'm really honest, that's it, really. I'm trying to think. I mean, broken down car.
Always problematic.
A couple of times, but no. And in my own head, I get stuck there quite a lot.
Writer's block, but I'm sure that doesn't happen too often from that point of view. Rebecca, over to you. Would you like to quiz Andy about life, the universe, and indeed Stuck?
I'd love to. I mean, first of all, I thought it was fantastic. I've given it a listen. I thought it was really uplifting. You know, it's well produced. It's, you know, really well developed. I really enjoyed it. But I'd love to know. I mean, I've read a bit about it. But for the listener, where did the idea behind Stuck come from?
It's a long story. I'm going to make short. I started writing a sitcom with another writer. Before this, and unfortunately he became ill, so we sort of shelved it for a little while, and I thought, you know what, I'll have a little look at how you get it made and put on telly and all the usual things that all of us do. I must stress at this point, I was writing just for the enjoyment of writing. You know, I didn't have any ideas of fame or money or whatever.
Well, yeah. Still or appearing on the Midweek Drive.
Yeah, exactly. And if I'd known now, I'd have got quite nervous. So I looked into it, and basically all the news said, unless you know somebody, you know, there's not a lot of chance of getting it made, or at least getting it made on telly, which is fine. But one little point that came out was if you make a radio play, that's got more chance because less people make it. I don't know if you know, my actual background is in advertising. And one of the things I really enjoy, funny enough, was writing radio ads. So I literally wrote myself a brief. And sat down and went, right, okay, so it's got to be half an hour long. I want it to have as few people as possible and not have many changing scenes. So then I started thinking about, you know, what's the smallest place you could be in? And the lift seemed like the smallest place.
Of course.
But adding to that, when I first started writing it, I had the idea, we were probably about a year or two after the Brexit vote. Now, I'm not going to get into politics whether I want to be or not, because that's not what
that's
I
that's another
for.
Comedy series, Andy. That's another comedy series entirely.
Well, absolutely. Well, maybe. Well, we might watch that live. You never know. But one of the things that really upset me was obviously the result, maybe, but the thing that upset me was actually this sort of racism that was coming more and more to the fore, and everybody seemed to be, especially on social media, it seems to be a place where people don't believe they have any. What's the word I'm after? You think as I wrote, I could think of a word, but they don't have responsibility. There's a word. Lots of syllables. Responsibility for their actions. It seems to be a place where, you know, it's almost like a playground where a bully can run free. And I started to kick out against that as well. And I started thinking about all those lovely comedies that I grew up with in the 70s and 80s. And I really liked those. But obviously a different time. And a lot of the things I write about are very normal life. But obviously life has moved on. But I like the gentleness of some of what they were doing, and the fact that anyone could sit there from, you know, a 6-year-old kid to your nan, and no one's going to get embarrassed, and everyone can laugh at the silly jokes, and you can do corny jokes, and you don't need to be embarrassed because you just build that as part of the character, not, you know, like you say, the Roger Mortis is like, you know, he's gold standard dad joke, isn't it?
It works in North Carolina. I mean, if Jessica Avertis can actually say she was super curious about that, then, you know, obviously it's going to cross over. You're already beating that American market into play.
Well, it's lovely, yeah. I mean, I wrote that as a sort of throwaway, and it seems to be one of the favourite lines that people like. So, yeah, what do I know? So I started thinking, actually, wouldn't it be great if I wrote something that allowed... I don't know, to sort of kick back at the kind of vitriol that we were getting. And then I started thinking about the 80s and the 70s, and I thought, actually, what happens if I use a call centre, but the person in the call centre is really, really clever, and the person stuck is a bit of a dimwit? And I started writing that. I'll be honest with you, I wrote probably about 2 hours worth of scripts and realised that it wasn't fun. It was just me writing really...
Ranting.
I was just ranting. And there's no fun for anybody here in a man rant. Luckily, I realised the two worlds crossed over, you know, stuck in a lift, a call centre where the... Sarita, in this case, is super smart but not too smug, and she becomes the sort of heroine that saves the day every day. And then wonderfully, time-wise, sorry if I'm talking too much, but wonderfully time-wise, we had, obviously, also in this time, we've also had the feminine, you know, the Me Too movement and that side of it, which I've watched. And I've been quite amazed by that as well, in a really good way, because I was talking to a colleague about it, and I said to it was a female colleague who was very, very opinionated, and I said, it's really weird for me personally, because I was always raised that everybody's got their own personal space and everybody is equal. And then when I started my business, I started it with another female. And so it very luckily, I'd written all these strong, normal female characters as well into the series, just because I wanted to. And timing just came out as well. So that was lucky.
I love the characters as well. And while you're on the subject, I'd just love to ask where you get the ideas for your characters from. Are they just, you know, you want to include the everyday character and make, you know, bring out the comedic parts of them? How do you go about putting those characters in? Because I do love the characters that you've put in there. And as you say, you've included, you know, diversity and you've got a bit of everything. I love that. I think that's great.
I think comedy's a really nice... It's a really nice medium that you can actually approach various different subjects without, you know, but keep it quite light. You know, if you write a drama, and I mean, obviously there's some subjects that you can't write that, you know, lightly, I'm not going to get into them, but there's obviously loads of subjects that you can't write that light with. But if you're going to get into, a gay couple, or at least a gay man coming out and what he goes through to come out, you know, it seemed quite funny at the time to then think, well, actually, what happens if I make the gay man already a gay man with his boyfriend, but the hard thing is coming out as a Rovers fan, not a United fan in this case, not a Rovers fan. But the joy of that allowed me then to explore actually what it must like the stupid things people say, you know, like, you know, oh, when did you decide it was going to be gay and that kind of thing, which obviously is still something that happens nowadays. And it allowed me, when did you know you was a United fan? Like, I've always been a United fan, you know. It was nice to lighten those things. But the characters come from various places. I would say there's a little bit of me in quite a lot of them. I would say that there's a lot of these people I've met over the years. Weirdly, when it comes to the men, Stagnites were an amazing place to find some really, really mix of diverse men that really shouldn't get on. And weirdly, they do get on for that one moment. So if you're stuck in a lift, you know, you could be... I think most of us, most of people I know anyway, we tend to sort of avoid arguments. So if you stuck me in a lift, say, with a racist, like a, you know, proper, you know, but he thought it was just Bants, probably for that, although it'd be killing me inside, and this is completely wrong, but it's a very character idea, is I would probably, just because I'm in a lift and stuck in a room with nowhere to go for 20 minutes.
What, no social distancing, Andy? We'd both die. Maybe
I wouldn't do it now, but you'd have to politely sort of try and point things out, but you still have to try and get on with them, don't you? Because you don't really want to have a row with someone when you can't get away, especially if you're born again coward like myself. So those kind of things. But if you go to like Stagnites, as I say, the really fun part about them bits is, which is really interesting, is you know, you might have a night or a couple of nights away with people, and you all get on and you go home, and oh, that was great. And you go to the wedding the following week or 2 weeks later, and you re-meet these people, and you realise they're idiots. They are absolute idiots, but you don't have to get on with them anymore, so you can't avoid them. So you can take those little bits. I mean, you probably got... I've got a mate... I shouldn't be saying this because I'm sort of writing a second series, and I've got a mate who mixes his metaphors up continually. And I was trying to, so he will say things like, "Oh, Andy," he said, "you know, life's, you know," it will say literally things like, "Life's like a rich tapestry. You've got to take the rough with the smooth." And you began, that doesn't
work. Making them up as he goes along.
He just mixes things up. You know what I say about black cats? Unlucky for some. And stuff like that. And you just sit there going, what? And you write these little things in a notebook. And I was trying to work out if I could get this character in stuck. But then I realised joyfully that I couldn't, sadly. But if I was to... put someone in who is, I don't know, in marketing or something in a lift, and he's talking to his apprentice or some youngster who's about to make a big, make a big presentation, and they say they're stuck in a lift, whatever, you know, he'd be trying to give him a pep talk, but he'll litter it with all these really like oddball phrases that would leave this poor kid more confused than ever. And I would also say, which made stuck quite easy, quite often when I start the first draft, I try not to think too much about what the character's going to do or say. I just try and get a dialogue down. And if it turns out that someone's really angry, or, you know, if you go back to, say, the second episode of Ali and, not Ali, Sally, the actress, actors called Ali, I keep getting them mixed up. But you get Sally and Matt's a bit hapless, lovable, but completely hopeless, which I would like to think that is definitely me. And then you've got this really angry pregnant woman. You know, I wrote her really angrily, but I didn't actually write the backstory of them being separated until about the third or fourth draft. Because then I started thinking, why is she so angry? Why does she hate him so much?
Yeah, and that's interesting. That's interesting to hear your process as well, because as I was listening, I'm thinking, you know, you're such a great storyline as well as characters. I wondered how that kind of happened, whether you sit down and it all sort of happens at once. So it's interesting that you find that it develops over time.
You have to let it develop, definitely. Yeah. There's a real problem, I think, you know, this is a problem as old as time. You see it with people painting, you see it with people writing songs, you see it with people writing novels and comedies and whatever. We all like to pretend that we just get a pen and da-da, you know, because we might walk past, you know, the artists outside of Pompidou or whatever, and they're doing the cartoons, and they do it immediately, and we just think these guys are amazing, when actually you realise when you see them drawing the person sitting there, it's a bit hit or miss whether or not they get it right. But all the paintings around them, they've obviously spent, like, you know, hours and hours in their studio or their flat. You just think, oh, it's brilliant. You know, you see a man like me and you go, well, I remember I took my wife, she brought it to me, actually. We went to Paris as a sort of first time we'd gone away together as a weekend. So we're holding hand and walking past the Pompidou, and this artist is like, hey, big nose, come here, I draw you. And I'm thinking,
that's why Brexit occurred, Andy, quite literally, you know, those kind of lines.
Yeah, but clear. I mean, I'd heard him, but clearly, I know. The guy's gonna sit me down and effectively draw a really sad-looking fella with a big nose.
And it's a romantic moment.
Yeah, and most people who can't draw, to be fair, will just assume it's brilliant, because the idea of seeing someone that can draw is like, oh wow, they draw. And I think it's the same with writing. And it's got slightly worse. You know, things like Instagram and stuff, because we've got, obviously, you know, call it instant skills, don't they? You can take a pretty rubbish picture, put a filter on it, put it up and get, you know, because you're quite popular, get 50 likes or 100 likes or 200 likes, you know, whereas actually there's some poor photographer who might take exactly the same shot and he's taking like 200 just to get that perfect bit of light, that perfect thing.
Andy, you brought an excerpt of Stuck along. Would you like to introduce it and actually just talk us through what we're about to hear?
Okay, so this is episode one. You've got effectively a funeral director and his sort of hapless, an apprentice, and they're carrying the coffin of a well-known gangster called Barefoot Bill down a whole bunch of, like, six flights of stairs, effectively, from the penthouse in the council estate in Croydon that he lives. And the youngster eventually, because he just can't hack it, eventually convinces the funeral director that let's put him in the lift. And against his you know, like we all do, don't we? We all know we shouldn't do it, but for some reason we just get a bit desperate and we try it and it goes wrong. So you've got effectively a coffin with a dead gangster in it and two funeral directors, and they've just got in the lift, and the lift has literally just broken down, and they've buzzed Sarita for help. They don't know her name. Well, I do know her name, Sarita, and we get to the point where they've just finished there asking for help, and they're now just sort of talking amongst themselves as they're waiting for her to give them an ETA.
Sarita, we're stuck.
You sound like you're having fun. If you give me a moment, sir, I will tell you when an engineer can get to you.
So you're not the engineer?
Me? No. I work in a head office in Delhi, directing engineers to lifts all over Britain. 1 minute, I will buzz you back with an ETA for our engineer.
Blimey. A call centre for broken lifts.
Well, lucky she's human. It could have been a recorded message.
Imagine that. Press 1 for broken lift, 2 for robbery.
What number is for dead body at the bottom of the coffin? Oh, what are we going to do?
Oh, don't panic. Well, no one's going to know, are they?
Of course they're going to know. He wanted to be displayed in an open coffin.
Did he?
If you'd looked at the paperwork, you'd have noticed he wants to be transferred to the chapel in an open coffin so the community can take one last look at him before he goes down under.
Down under? How deep's the grave?
Oh, Jack.
Sorry. Well, anyway, he's got a lid on him.
Yeah, I know he's got a lid on him at the moment. We remove it just before we leave the building and carry him to the car. Only now, if we carry him to the car, people ain't going to see him.
Maybe they'll think he was taller when he was alive.
What are you saying? Dead people shrink?
Perhaps they'll think he's shy.
Shy? He's not shy. He hasn't shrunk. He's not playing peekaboo. He's dead, you idiot.
People are going to wonder where we are soon.
Hello? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Of course you are. Your engineer will be with you in about an hour.
Well, can't it be any quicker? We've got a dead body in here.
A dead body? I was only gone a minute.
No, he was already with us.
Oh, I see. No, actually, I don't see. Why did you put a dead body in our lift? I mean, it's not very hygienic, is it?
Oh, no, it's all right. He's in a coffin.
He's in a coffin?
Yes, he's in a coffin. We're funeral directors and we're taking him to be buried.
You're using a lift to bury him? How deep is his grave?
How deep is his grave? Yeah, good one.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Shut up and show some respect, Jack. Right, who am I talking to again?
I'm Sarita.
I need some help, please, Sarita. As it stands, you have two funeral directors.
I'm an apprentice. I've only been here a week.
Okay. You have one funeral director and an apprentice currently stuck in one of your lifts with the dead body of a notorious local crime lord slumped in the bottom of what will be a half-open coffin.
Okay, I see a problem.
And with a grieving family of nutters above us and a bunch of locals that have gathered in the street below us.
Okay, okay, one problem at a time. Why is the body at the bottom of the coffin?
Obviously, to get the coffin in the lift, we had to stand it up. Otherwise, it wouldn't have fit.
Obviously. Give me a moment and I'll see if I can speed up our engineer. Oh, I've got two divorcees stuck in a courtroom lift. If we don't get them out soon, one of them might get stuck into the other one.
Imagine that.
You could say I see the ups and downs of life all over Britain. One moment.
Thank you.
She seems lovely.
Yeah, she'll be even lovelier if she can help us get out of this lift. Oh, I can't believe I listened to you. What an idiot.
Who's an idiot?
I'm an idiot. I don't even know what you are.
An idiot's apprentice?
Don't push it.
Absolutely wonderful. The star of the series, of course, undoubtedly Sarita, training to be a doctor so she can follow her dreams, see the world and help people less fortunate than herself. I'm reading here, obviously, from the publicity blurb, Andy. While she was training, her younger sister, Anna, married a businessman in England as part of an arranged marriage. Not long after she leaves for Europe, their mother gets sick and unfortunately passes away. This sounds like a tragedy. Is this a classic Oscar Wilde moment that life is a comedy to those who think, a tragedy to those who feel?
Maybe.
It's either that or the elevator pitch carried to ultimate extremes, really. You know, you're in a pit with elevator with Richard Branson or a well-known multi-millionaire individual, and you got until the elevator reached the top to actually sell your pitch to him. Is that another aspect in terms of the elevator?
Do you know that the joy of the elevator is the fact that it adds time pressure to it? You know, I'd read years ago that if you want to write anything, then the good thing you need is a bit of conflict and add another element of time or something, you know, and then out of the conflict and the deadline you can. So and the joy of the elevator, if you go back to the extremes of Richard Branson and giving him an elevator pitch, I mean, that could literally be an episode if you want it to be, you know. I'm a firm believer. Do you know what? I heard a phrase today. Actually, I was watching a really rubbish film before I came on.
Warming yourself up.
Sorry?
Warming yourself up. Watch a rubbish movie. Then it's all going to be good by comparison.
It was a Bill Nighy movie. So and effectively, the Rachel Weisz, she plays like a book editor, and she's a book editor, and she said, "I'm looking for the next great novel." She said, "Why is it?" She's sort of got this manuscript. She said, "Look, I know people's feelings are interesting, but when will people realise the world is interesting too?" Which I kind of like that, because actually it's a very, you know, a very true thing. When you start writing very insular about your feelings and stuff, it's very hard to actually get anybody else interested in it. If you start writing about the wider world. So one of the joys, though, when you know you've got a good idea, and if you're pitching, even if you're just chatting to friends in the pub. So in this case, I said, I've got this idea for a comedy. It's going to be people stuck in a lift. And the original idea was it was going to be in different buildings all over the country. But then I realised I couldn't do a very good backstory for Sarita, because if she's in Glasgow one day and in the following week she's in Bradford and the following week she's right down in Cornwall, you'll never get past the fact that my mum died. That'd be about as much as you could reveal of her as a character. So putting it in one place allowed me to then have an actual character arc for her, which was really, really important.
Now, in terms of Metropolis, of course, you can actually get the thing from that point of view. let's talk a little bit about the actors that we've heard, because it's quite an interesting range of talent you've actually got providing the vocals for this. You've got Halima Hussein, Linda Marlowe, Mark Armstrong, and Diva Mia, I think, to actually work through that. So what was the casting process like? Or did you just put out the call and say, come on, guys, let's be creative?
No, I had three strokes of luck, to be honest. The first one was a friend of mine. Well, I'd worked a couple of years ago on a small film for Disney, and I got to know an actor, a lovely woman called Lily Streams. I got to know her. She lives in the same town as me. And just through, you know, social media and having spent a week doing a shoot with her, we got to know each other and a bunch of other actors, and it was just nice. And then what happened there was she was basically touring Europe, and obviously the pandemic happened and her tour got cut short. And the day before lockdown, we met for a coffee, and I just basically threw the script at her. And I had two and a half episodes written. I chatted to her about it. And then, you know, it became quite apparent that she'd be a really good ally. So she became my producer, one of my producers. And then because she's an actor and her dad's an actor, they knew a lot of people. So we just basically, so the first thing was obviously meeting Lily. The second thing was, unfortunately, not that lucky, but her work basically drying up, so she was suddenly free. And then the third thing was we were able then to talk to a whole bunch of actors that were free as well.
Resting,
yeah. And a couple of them I knew already through previous projects, like Mark Armstrong. I've worked with him before. And it was just great that actually these people free. And then we did Zoom rehearsals, like this, which was weird because there's no comedy timing in a Zoom rehearsal.
Oh, you've always got that synchronicity thing, or indeed Zoom face. Like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all in the...
timing.
Exactly. So, yeah, and we just worked it through that way. And interestingly, the last episode, which is sort of basically that's got Lily and Mark in it. I'd basically written episodes 5 and 6, and then realised they were really, really dull.
Episode 5, anything you say, stuck in a lift with a policewoman. What's not to appreciate about that one when you've got a burly teenager and Sarita proving her innocence before the lift starts working again?
Well, I mean, who doesn't like Death in Paradise?
And in terms of accessing the details, Andy, is stuck-comedy.com the best place to go to? I mean, obviously, you're on most of the platforms in terms of, obviously, Spotify and so on. Although I noticed you're not on Podbean. But, of course, we're putting that right today because this obviously goes out on Podbean. So there we are.
Oh, I agree. Well, we can put it on Podbean as well if you'd like it. I can, you know, I'd be more than happy. I mean, basically, we've got a Facebook page, we've got a Twitter page, we've got obviously a web page. We're on Instagram. I mean, you name it, we're pretty much there. And again, yeah, same
as myself. TikTok next.
Maybe. Could you imagine? It'll just be me pointing to things in the lift, though, wouldn't it? That's what it seems
exactly.
to be.
Across all the socials. Rebecca, any other thoughts or questions from yourself?
Yeah, we were talking a bit about, you know, earlier about how you got it onto radio and how you formulated it for that. But I was wondering how it differs to write for radio as opposed to, say, a televised comedy, because obviously you rely heavily on the sound and the audio, don't you? And I think, as Jessica's comment mentioned, the sound production is fantastic and you've got a real good idea of what's going on so that it is very visual in your mind. But how do you find that that has to translate to radio when you're using just a script?
You just have to assume that no one can, well, you know that nobody can see anything. So
yeah.
You just have to basically put little flags in the sand all the way. So it'd be things like when Harry's wandering up to a lift and he's sort of like, come on, lift, you know, where are you? Where are you? Oh, you're there, brilliant. Yeah. Where's the alarm? Where's the alarm?
Not too much exposition, Andy, not too much exposition.
No, but it is sadly it is as brutal as that, you know. And then like anything, as you say, you can have too much, but until you start getting people doing read throughs and things, then you can be a little bit with your red pen, sort of slash those lines a little bit. I had a creative director who you know, you'd show like five ideas years ago, and he would say, "Well, what's your favourite?" And you go, "Well, they're all my favourite, you know, because I've got five ideas." And his line was awful, but it's quite true. And he says, "Just Andy, sometimes you just got to kill your babies." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I don't like that one." It's a horrible line, but it's true. When you're in recording, you just.
I've heard the kill the babies line, but I tend to say, just sum up the difference between the professional and the non-professional in two words: ruthless editing. That's all you need, basically. Ruthless editing.
Yeah, it is pretty much. Yeah, and you can't be. But the exposition side, as you say, too much of it, you can, but you don't know until you start hearing it. And then the other side, really quickly with that, is then let other people. Once you hear it being spoken, you know, another producer, Ross, he's pretty brutal. So when he hears it, he'll tell me, "Jesus, that was dull," or, you know, you laboured that point, didn't you? And instead of just being, you can't get too defensive. And I think the only thing I can say, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm, you know, particularly successful as a writer, whatever. But the real thing that a lot of people forget, I think, especially if you're writing scripts and for other people, is it's not yours. If you're writing it to entertain other people, then you have to think of what other people want. You know, if you've got some amazing poetic line that you think is amazing, then, you know, that's fine, that's lovely, you know, keep hold of it, put it in a notebook. But if you're writing something that you want hundreds or thousands or millions or even just five people that you don't know to like it, then just try not to own it, hold on to it too much.
Makes it all Yeah,
it works very well. And I mean, evidently, because as soon as you listen to it, I mean, I'd love the first story with, you know, the coffin, and you can hear they're carrying a coffin, and it just makes it more comedic because you can see the scene in front of you. And I think it works so well. So however you've done it is fantastic. And I think the feedback you're getting is obviously brilliant. As brutal as it is, it's obviously brilliant because it's come out really, really well.
Wonderful.
There
Thank
we have
you.
It. You see, we did listen to it. That's why we also gave you the opportunity to make your own selection for what clip you wished us to use. And we duly did so, which is all very good. Andy, we've got two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I really did, yeah. That's good. Thank you. Loved it.
All right. Well, the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you come back and keep us appraised of the next series of course, Stuck Series 2? After, of course, Season 1 has actually had a wonderful climax of an ending, where you can find stuck-comedy.com. Will you return? Will the elevator doors open again?
Absolutely. It'll be a pleasure. And just very, very quickly, just not really told anyone else this, or this I think I have, one of the ideas we have for Stuck is not just doing radio, we might even put it on the theatre as well. Like write an actual theatrical, you know, I can just see different lifts.
Wow. Where people can actually go and actually sit in a theatre in numbers together,
Who knows?
Wow. This is really tough, Andy.
You won't see Sarita though, we'll hide her somewhere.
Something right. I'm so- was scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. And I'm wondering what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep the smile from my face. Losing control, yeah, I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. When you started out with nothing,
going through interesting and changing times in so many ways, but it would seem that 80% of parents are still very concerned about their children's future. Only 80%, you might well say? Well, yes, indeed. A quarter of parents, though, are still unsure of the best way to save for their children's future, with 62% looking for new ways to invest. Accordingly, we're delighted now with a possible range of suggestions to invite us to join us on the show, the head of precious metals marketing at the Royal Mint, of course, the wonderful Karina Hicks. How are you, Karina?
Hi there, Alex. Thank you very much for that very kind introduction. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So today, of course, we have the Royal Mint's 2021 savings report. It's revealed that the majority, as we said, of UK parents are looking for new ways to invest to support their children. This is something which maybe they haven't thought about in terms of ways to possibly actually invest, i.e. precious metals.
That's right, Alex. Yeah, it's a very exciting offering. It's a brand new offering from the Royal Mint, and we believe it's the first of its kind in the market altogether. It's actually a digital gold accumulation account, but it's backed by real physical gold investment bars, which are all stored very securely at our on-site vault with us in Llantrisant, one of the most secure places in the UK. And the reason it's exciting is because the Royal Mint has actually been producing precious metals investment products for 1,100 years, with the oldest organisation in the UK. So it makes complete sense for us to adapt with technology and adapt with the evolving needs of consumers and investors and produce a product and offer a product that allows people to invest in gold very quickly and very easily from as little as £25 a month.
We do live in very changing and uncertain times from that point of view. Is this a good way in which parents can actually help their children's savings?
So we believe that planning for the future is absolutely crucial. And this is just another way to accumulate gold, as I say, in a very easy and accessible way. Gold has performed particularly well over the long term. And in fact, over the last 2 years, it's performed phenomenally well. We can never say how it will perform in the future. But in terms of investing in gold, this is certainly a quick, easy and accessible way to do so.
And presumably, again, we're looking at saving for the future. We're looking at things like owning properties, getting married, starting a family, all the kind of life barks that effectively have traditionally been part of the human experience. From your own point of view, is this one of the best routes further forward, or would it be a case of no, just invest in stocks and shares? They can go up and down.
So it's completely up to consumers. There are lots of different ways to invest. And if anybody is seriously considering something completely new, we always recommend that they speak to a financial advisor. But in terms of investing in gold, this is a product that I'm extremely excited about. I have two young children myself, a three-year-old and a five-year-old. I've already opened my little treasures account and I can't wait for their 18 or 21st birthday. We'll have to see how mature they are when it comes to the time to be able to present them with the special gift of gold, which is obviously unique and different, and for me symbolizes something very special for my loved ones.
So we're still actually with gold, because I did think a few years ago platinum was going to be taking over from gold, but gold is still very much the key one forward for the future.
Platinum has also performed extremely well, again particularly over the last year, but gold, I suppose, continues to be the most popular, particularly amongst our customers at the Royal Mint.
Yeah. And you've already suggested in terms of the ways you've been dealing with your own children. What advice would you give to parents in terms of making those first steps to investing in their children's future?
Always make sure that obviously you have enough cash available to do what you need to do on a monthly basis, and then just make a decision to save as much as you can afford to without getting yourself into trouble. And as I mentioned earlier, if you are considering anything new, then I would always recommend speaking to a financial advisor.
Excellent. And where would you point people on the web, Karina, to find out more details about this and indeed the Royal Mint's 2021 savings report?
Of course. So anybody interested in finding out more about Little Treasures can visit our website at royalmint.com/littletreasures.
Karina Hicks, Head of Precious Metals Marketing at the Royal Mint. Many thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on and keep on saving.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, from life's little treasures and financial investment in children's future to actually their psychological well-being, with recent research by LG suggesting that the mental well-being of our children can be negatively impacted by basically being bored and not actually doing things, etc. Although it might well be that actually we're looking forward to going back to school in all sorts of ways now that homeschooling seems to be, for the moment at least, a thing of the past. To address some of the challenges, psychologically speaking and behaviourally speaking, we're delighted to welcome that awesome television psychologist and general all-round wonderful soul. It's the fabulous Emma Kenny. How are you, Emma?
Oh, very much better for that introduction. Thank you.
Perfectly okay. As you know, it's and we the way we always like to call them as we see them. So let's progress with respect to this LG report in terms of some of the findings. Were you surprised by them, or was it a case of, well, yeah, you know, people do obviously sort of move around. That's what human beings are. They're contrary feet individuals, no matter what age they are.
Do you know what? I was actually quite chuffed when I read this report because of the way that the parents were reacting to children. So the fact that 70% of parents have said that, you know, the children are excited to have gone back to school, that made me happy, because I think children need to be around their friends. I really do. It's been lacking for far too long. But the fact that 43% of parents in this LG research said, actually, I'm really looking forward to the Easter break now because I don't have to have the responsibility of being a teacher. I can just enjoy my children. I think that in the UK, we really do enjoy our children. That's one of the things that we really take to heart. And I think that the past 12 months has made it more difficult to just have that enjoyment, because you've had to do your life admin, your work from home, you've had to educate your children, you've had to be the behavioral monitors, all of those things that are responsibilities that you wouldn't have ordinarily had in that experience. So I think that the research is lovely to read because it's saying what we know, which is that we have great parents in the UK, but it's also reminding us that children have had their mental well-being affected. You know, they have, without a doubt. Anybody can see that their children will have lost motivation. They won't be as into potentially some of the educational things that they did before because of the fact that they haven't had that consistency. So that's where I kind of step in and talk about balance a lot, which is, you know, you've got this incredible technology now in the home, but you also need to kind of make that very balanced with the outside world. And what can you do as a parent to really enjoy the holidays whilst bringing balance to your children's life again?
The Victorian ideal then of children being seen and not heard has been well and truly put into the past, presumably then, Emma.
Oh, yes. Children should definitely be heard. I think that society runs best when it has the most open access for children. So don't get me wrong. So my boys love gaming. So that is something that I've had to get to know as I've grown with my children, because it's a world that they inhabit that I wouldn't have inhabited unless I'd have tried to make the effort. And I realized that when they're on headsets talking to their friends, they're in a kind of virtual youth club. So therefore, they're having social experience. When we sit down and when I would do a little, you know, I watched Disney till I went blue in the face. The stories and the magic and the relationships that they kind of explore through those situations. When we sit down and watch documentaries, you know, the educational opportunities that they get that I would never have had as a child, because I just didn't have access. And we had a black and white television, and there was television for like 1 hour a day or something that we were allowed to watch. So it was a very different structure. So I think children are, we've definitely spoken down that children should be seen and not heard. I think it's now that children should be celebrated and embraced. And I love that about the way that the modern world is.
And as you mentioned, the B word there, very much important to keep a balance between physical activities and, of course, screen-based activities, presumably.
Absolutely. Listen, I am the first person in the world to say that as a parent, the more you can get your kids outside, covered in dirt, playing, build up their immunity that way, do all those things that we know are really healthy for children, get them to think about nature, get them to be curious and inquisitive. And I mean, at any age, you know, if you've got an elder kid, get them outside, go for a walk with them. If you don't want to talk, you know, if they're finding it intimidating because they're a teenager, pop in their earbuds and just let them listen to some kind of Spotify, something kind of that you can share on Audible, for example. Just do something that makes you have that shared connection, but that gets you in the fresh air. I'm never going to go against technology these days, because it has brought so many opportunities to childhood. You know, it does make, for example, accessibility in the home when it comes down to a child going in it, being able to sit in a room whilst the parent is working in the next room without the parent feeling horribly guilty because their child is being entertained and is enjoying themselves. That's brilliant. But equally, can we kind of try and get them as much fresh air as possible? Because we know that white light on the skin is a powerful, powerful need for a child. It means that it regulates the hormones in the brain. It helps them get a healthy night's sleep. Obviously, I've been working with LG on this campaign. And one of the things that they do is they've got these OLED TVs, which are eye comfort display, which means that it's a lower blue light emission. And that helps to reduce the likelihood of interference within sleep. So there are things that you can do with technology to make it less imposing on your brain, shall we say. But I would argue as well, if you're a parent who wants to bring balance to your child's life, then for at least an hour to 2 hours before they go to sleep, I would arguably cut off their technology, and I would get them to read, or I would read to them, or I would help them get a hot bath, you know, do things that is taking a healthy bedtime routine so that they can relax and get a good night's sleep, because children, more than anything, when they're growing, they need a really good night's sleep.
Presumably then the maxim that the family that plays together stays together could also be applied here.
I mean, I think that that's one of the most important things to families. It's to have fun. It's to be playful. I often pose myself that question. When do we stop playing? I think it's a strange thing that we have this amazing breadth in childhood to just be playful and gleeful and share our experiences with one another and be very much in the present. And then there seems to be a point where that doesn't translate anymore. And yet when we allow ourselves to dip our toe back into that world, you know, and you see this with new parents who have maybe got a 4 or 5 year old, you know, and they'll be running around a park pretending to be an airplane. And you can see that the parent is enjoying it as much as a child. So sometimes, like you said, it's about being playful and reminding ourselves that we're always that inner child. And the great thing about the inner child now is it can be met in so many different ways, both on a technological basis, and as you were noting then, on a bit of a playful basis outdoors, or having fun games inside, playing board games, crafting together, whatever makes you feel that connection and bonding, it will increase your connection and bonding too.
Now, clearly, I always recommend ekenny.co.uk as a go-to website for all manner of wonderful things, just to see your good self, TV psychologist and presenter in full force, Emma. But is there another website for the LG survey that you'd like to promote today that people can obviously find out details about this survey on and more?
You can go to lg.com/UK. But I think most people have got LG products in their home anyway, because you get all the free built-in stuff. So it's a bargain. That's why I'm doing this at all, because it's in my home.
It's a win-win situation. Emma, it's been awesome as ever. We know those last two questions, but we'll put them to you in any case. They are our consumer-based ones. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I always do.
This is good. So I presume then you'll be back with us in the not too distant future talking about more matters psychological in the forthcoming world.
You absolutely know I will be.
Well, from the Department of... That's an interesting statistic. It would seem that 6 out of 10 people were unaware that there were no professional qualifications needed to offer paid-for tax advice. Great, you might well say. No need to actually worry about bureaucracy. Well, actually, there could be all sorts of problems raising their heads, particularly when you bear in mind that almost two-thirds of UK business owners believe that accountants and tax advisors have played an essential role advising on financial issues during, of course, the pandemic that we're still going through. So to actually address the aspects relating to this and the importance of actually ensuring that you have a fully accredited accountancy soul actually working with your good self, we're delighted to welcome the Head of Public Affairs and Public Policy at the AAT. That's Phil Hall. How are you, Phil?
Very well, thank you.
So, Phil, that initial headline that two-thirds of people unaware that you can effectively sort of set yourself up and say, right, I'm an accountant, and you may not have even got O-level maths or GCSE maths to actually work through that. There's no kind of qualification that's needed whatsoever. That's a bit of a shocker, isn't it?
Well, sadly, it came as little surprise that AAT's research earlier this year showed that most business owners, as you rightly say, had no idea that anyone can call themselves an accountant, that no qualifications are necessary. And this is an issue we've been aware of and have been campaigning on for some years. I think most people probably don't know that their accountant doesn't have to be qualified or a member of a professional body until a problem arises. At which stage it's obviously too late for them. And sadly, there are lots of stories of those problems occurring.
Well, you're absolutely right, of course. So, I mean, the next logical question is, are there any checks or regulations that are actually in place to ensure that accountants and indeed tax advisors are legitimate and actually know their business?
Well, to be a member of any of the main professional bodies, including AAT, being appropriately qualified is essential, as is undertaking regular continuing professional development and holding professional indemnity insurance in case anything goes wrong. Likewise, all professional bodies have their own means of monitoring and enforcing their respective rules and requirements, and they have a complaints process as well as disciplinary processes too. The problem is only two-thirds of accountants and tax advisors are members of professional bodies. So if you're unfortunate enough to get an unregulated one, and no, there really is very, very little protection for you.
And it would seem self-evident to actually deal with the next question in terms of what impact can poor tax advice on accountancy actually have on a business. I mean, presumably it can impact profits on a sort of initial level, but it can actually lead to all sorts of breaches of financial regulations and filing of accounts as well, presumably.
Absolutely. For all of which, the taxpayer is responsible, not the agent. So what we often find is if there is a problem, then the agent very quickly disappears and the taxpayer is left holding the can. I mean, there are many horror stories of mistakes and poor advice that can leave taxpayers with unnecessary fines, penalties and tax liabilities. But a couple of recent examples that we've had from our members who have brought issues to our attention. One is... a business that switched to an AAT licensed accountant from an unregulated accountant and found that they had an unknown £48,000 VAT liability. Now, obviously, that's a very unpleasant surprise. Another smaller one, but again, typical, is an unregulated agent who wanted to charge almost £1,000 to their client just because they wanted to switch their accountant. Now, if you're with an accountant who's with a professional body, that is not only unethical, but it's in breach of the body's rules. So it just wouldn't happen. As you're an unregulated accountant, you can pretty much do what you like and largely get away with it. So it really is a serious issue about consumer protection.
So assuming that you're a business owner listening to this and you want to find out how the Association of Accounting Technicians can actually help you with this, and is it a case of, oh, it's too late unless you've actually signed up with somebody? I mean, what's the process that people should actually go through if they want to have a full AAT recognised sort of impact or sort of connection with their business?
Well, the first thing to do is to I would certainly urge anyone with concerns to check that their accountant or tax advisor is a member of a professional body. In terms of AAT, what you can do is go to our website, aat.org.uk. There's a section on there called Find an AAT Licensed Accountant or Bookkeeper. So you can simply find out from there. We've listed all our members, all our licensed accountants and licensed bookkeepers, and you can do it that way. If your accountant is saying they're a member of another body, then all of those bodies have something similar. You can just go on their website and check to find out that that agent actually is genuinely a member of that body. If they're not, then some serious questions need to be asked.
There are obviously lots of challenges being faced by businesses, more small and large, during our current environment. I mean, not least of which, of course, is the pandemic. What in terms of the AAT's wish list, are you most looking for in terms of a kind of change in the regulation? I mean, would it be a case of, ideally, every accountancy transaction needs to be actually sanctioned by the AAT? What's the sort of thing that you're looking for?
Well, AAT believes that anyone who's offering paid-for tax or accountancy services should be required by law to be a member of a recognised professional body, whether that's AAT or any of the other various professional bodies who are out there. This isn't any different from what the law already requires for doctors, nurses and solicitors. So we're simply asking the question, why should accountants be any different?
Absolutely. I mean, presumably it's a case of financial health as opposed to other forms of health, and the two can obviously be interconnected. So share with us once again, Phil, where's the best place to go to find out details about the Association of Accounting Technicians?
So if you go to aat.org.uk, that's our website, a wealth of information on there. As I say, to check whether or not your accountant is AAT licensed, there's a particular section on our website for that. Alternatively, if you just want information about our campaign dealing with unregulated accountants, simply go to Google, type in the words AAT and unregulated.
And for people who might well be accountants listening to this and they're not actually signed up with the AAT as yet, would you encourage them to do so as soon as possible?
Absolutely. Or, as I say, any of the other professional bodies, we may not be suitable for them. They may find one of the other professional bodies is more suitable. That's absolutely fine. Two thirds, as I said earlier, of accountants are members of a professional body. What we're really concerned about is that third who are largely unregulated.
Phil Hall, Head of Public Affairs and Public Policy at the aforementioned AAT, of course, the Association of Accounting Technicians. Many thanks indeed, and be well.
Thank you very much.